Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Andrew McDermott. Today my guest is Cornelius Hunter, adjunct professor at Biola University and author of the award-winning Darwin's God, Evolution and the Problem of Evil. Hunter's other books include Darwin's Proof and his latest, Science's Blind Spot. Dr. Hunter's interest in the theory of evolution involves the historical and theological, as well as the scientific, aspects of the theory. His blog is also called Darwin's God. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Hunter.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, even before the landmark ENCODE project some years ago debunked the Darwinian inference that a large portion of DNA in the genome is junk, intelligent design theorists suspected as much, and have for a while. For decades, Darwinists insisted that much of the genome is non-functional evolutionary debris, exactly what we should see if life were the result of a trial-and-error natural process, like natural selection acting on random mutations. Well, all that has gone out the window. Recently, the Simons Foundation found that mutations in non-coding DNA can be implicated in an individual's health, even if they do not yield proteins. Another example comes from research done at the University of Toronto, where they found that dozens of genes previously thought to have similar roles across species are in fact unique to humans. These newly identified genes, called transcription factors, are more disparate than previously thought. Now, Dr. Hunter reports on the latest, we thought it was junk, but it turned out to be crucial, study. Well, first, can you give us a brief overview of what satellite DNA is?
Right, Andrew. So yeah, satellite DNA is not orbiting the Earth. It's not launched on a rocket. It's one of those terms in biology that just sometimes can be confusing. It's DNA that is often repeating, so short segments of a particular sequence of nucleotides that repeats over and over again. And it tends to have a biased composition. There'd be more adenine or more guanine or something. And so when you take a look at the composition of it, it's going to be a little different than typical DNA. So it lies outside of the typical DNA. So that's hence the term satellite. But for our purposes here, it is short snippets of DNA that are repeating. They do not code for proteins, which is often considered to be so important by evolutionists in the evolutionary history of natural selection. Those gene-coding proteins were so important. So it's non-coding DNA that has a little bit of a different composition.
Okay. So what has this paper found as they've looked at satellite DNA in fruit flies?
Yeah, so they looked at satellite DNA in fruit flies, as you say, and they found some interesting things. First of all, there were hints that these satellite DNA had some interesting possible functions, and this study helped to advance that idea and helped to discover some specific functions. So what they helped to confirm is this satellite DNA can be very important. In one particular species, the fruit fly, which is often studied, they found that this one particular sequence of satellite DNA, five nucleotides long, adenine, adenine, guanine, adenine, guanine. So it's AAGAG, five nucleotides repeated. That small sequence repeated is crucial for the fertility of the male fruit flies. Very important. You disable those DNA and you have some problems. That's one finding. Another finding was specific to certain species. I mentioned the fruit fly. So there's many different species of these, you know, flies, and it wasn't prevalent across the species. These particular types of satellite DNA that are functionally important. These specific sequences of satellite DNA that are important were not consistent across the fly species. They're more species specific. And that just doesn't really work very well with evolutionary theory, with common descent. The whole idea behind common descent is your neighboring species are similar. They are inheriting their DNA from their common ancestor. You're going to have a lot of similarity between the DNA. And indeed, that's been a major argument for why common descent must be true. So here you have a finding of DNA, satellite DNA that is species specific and functionally crucial. Very interesting combination of findings in this study.
Huh. So some fruit flies will have this particular satellite DNA and other species won't.
Right, or very small traces of it. It's often not zero or one, but it's a matter of degrees.
Got it. Is that what it means by taxonomically restricted?
That's right, yeah. Taxonomically restricted is a more fancy way of saying species specific. It's restricted according to the taxonomy.
Okay. So this does have important function. And up till now, did they recognize this satellite DNA or had they put it aside and didn't know about it?
No, they had recognized it and there were hints of some function, as I mentioned. It was on the back burner and something to study and so forth. So, you know, further studies were done and just confirming that, oh, there really is some significant function. So, you know, one hint at function is when DNA is copied, they use the word expressed. If you express the DNA using the transcription machinery, so you make a copy of it, that's a hint, right? That's a hint that, hey, something's going on here. The cell is making a copy of this DNA. It probably is doing something. The ENCODE project that you mentioned discovered that, well, this actual expression of the genome is much more massive than we thought. Of the vast majority of the genome is being copied. That didn't jive with evolutionary expectations. And so evolutionists thought, maybe the copy machine is out of control here. Maybe we've got a copy machine that's kind of lost its stop button. And it's just, you know, going crazy and copying all this DNA. And it's just more junk DNA, more junk copies around. Not a big deal. Evolution just handles it. And it's only a small fraction of that DNA that's actually doing anything. Not a very good prediction. And so what we're finding is when copies are made, it's a good sign that there's function. And in this case, the function is crucial. So it's being copied. That was a hint that was, you know, evident years ago. And now we're finding, and you know, more significant and in fact crucial function for this DNA. Without it, you lose male fertility. Without male fertility, you're not going to get very far. Evolution isn't going to work very well.
Yeah. Well, how would the Darwinists respond to these findings?
Yeah, it's interesting. The paper itself that has this concludes that, gee, this is interesting. We're finding closely related species of flies that do not share the same satellite DNA. And in some of these species, it's crucial. That's evidence that, gee, evolution can do some pretty interesting things. Evolution can actually evolve very quickly and rapidly functionally critical satellite DNA. In other words, the assumption that everything evolved and evolution is true is just there. It's like the furniture in the room. That's your going in position. It is true. We found something here that didn't make sense according to evolution, violated our predictions. Oh, okay. That just means that evolution is that much more powerful. Evolution is that much more amazing. Gee, look what evolution can do. It actually creates satellite DNA rapidly and it instantly takes on critical function. Wow, that's interesting. Well, let's just learn more about evolution. So it's all within the paradigm. Nothing can shake the paradigm. And it's really kind of humorous when you look at it.
So that's interesting. Yeah, it won't necessarily shake them out of it, but they'll give Darwinism the credit for it.
Yeah. And, you know, philosophers have analyzed this sort of thing and how when you have a strong paradigm within science, that's kind of how it works. Evidence is just simply interpreted according to the paradigm. It doesn't really matter whether it demolishes it or not. You just kind of keep on trucking and modify and modify and modify and make up new stories to adjust to the evidence, which is contradicting your theory. At some point, at some time, you know, the last straw is going to drop. You get to the point where it's just silly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're far beyond that point, actually. But you get to the point where even the committed evolutionists start to think, gee, maybe the theory actually is problematic.
Yeah. And we're starting to see signs of that, you know, conferences over in the United Kingdom, like Evolution Evolving and, you know, the Royal Society meeting a few years back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That's right, Andrew. There are some encouraging signs, and they're kind of first steps because, of course, they're not actually questioning the overall paradigm of a naturalistic of origins. They're willing to kind of step out of the big box of evolution. They're still going to call for some sort of naturalistic origins. But yes, this certainly is encouraging to at least see a little bit of, you know, opening of the minds.
So is the notion of junk DNA dead yet, or is it still being used by some as a way to explain Darwinian evolution?
I definitely would say there's increased skepticism, and more evolutionists are definitely realizing we should not appeal to junk DNA. We should not label DNA as junk just because we don't know what it does. I think there's a greater realization that the junk DNA label has failed, and we should stop using that concept and that term. However, you still see it, and it still is a favorite fallback position. It's going to be difficult for evolutionists to drop that idea altogether.
So each time we find function, it's going to help with those assumptions that scientists are making, and eventually they might come to a consensus as far as what was considered junk DNA.
Yes, that's true. The problem is there's so much of biology. So the genome itself is huge. And then there's so much more to the cell and so much more to biology. There's always more areas where you can identify junk, right?
Yeah.
And it's an interesting history, actually, that I've written some about, that as you go through the centuries, the new findings, the new technology that develops that allows us to understand more about the world and more about biology, those new things easily get labeled as junk. And then over time, you begin to understand those better and realize that they're not junk. And so they make their way into the functional category. And then at that time, there's some other new things that are discovered, and those are labeled as junk. So we'll see if that trend ever goes away, but that's kind of been an interesting trend.
Yeah. Well, just as we're wrapping up here, you're doing some teaching, you're doing some writing. Are you working on any new projects?
Well, yes, I am writing more history and philosophy papers that kind of get at just this sort of discussion we're having. So I enjoy looking at the science itself, but I also enjoy looking at the history and the philosophy and kind of explaining how we got here and how we can best understand the scientific evidence that's being uncovered.
Okay, so more to come. Well, that's about all the time we have to explore this particular paper, but something tells me we'll be back again soon enough, reporting on more function and relevance for DNA, formerly thought of as Darwinian detritus. Dr. Hunter, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate it.
We'll look out for more of Dr. Hunter's writing on this and other topics at evolutionnews.org and his blog Darwin's God at darwins-god.blogspot.com. Listen to more episodes of ID the Future on the web at idthefuture.com or through your favorite podcasts app. For ID the Future, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
From jumping insects with real gears to the strange world of carnivorous plants, the details of the natural world reveal planning and purpose. In his new book, Foresight, Brazilian scientist Marcos Eberlin shows how the mantis shrimp can pack a deadly punch and how a tiny protein in a bird's eye may work just like a GPS. You can join Marcos Eberlin as he uncovers a myriad of artful solutions to major engineering problems in chemistry and biology. Find out how these solutions point beyond blind evolution and point instead to the designing ability of a mind, and a mind with foresight. Order on Amazon or visit DiscoveryInstitutePress.com to get your own copy of the book Foresight. Get Eberlin's new book from Amazon or at DiscoveryInstitutePress.com/foresight.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.